Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we love to bring you this show right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. You can listen now every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. with myself or my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. Or what's so great about all the shows here on Progressive Radio Network is that you can listen live and you can actually hear us anytime by just going to prn.fm and go to shows, look for Natural Nurse. Or, of course, listen to any of the other wonderful shows that we have right here on Progressive Radio Network. I am getting so excited because we're about to start a range of classes, such as a tour of Chinatown, where we spend the day in Chinatown. We will be going to the Chinese Museum, having a sacred tea ceremony, doing Qigong in the park. And Dr. Zamperone and I have been doing that tour for, this is our 27th year. Oh, my goodness. Can't believe it. But nonetheless, it's true. And we would love to have you join us. We do that twice a year. Also coming up is the Naval Expo. And there's one in Manhattan as well as one on Long Island, which brings together cutting-edge holistic physicians and practitioners so that you can meet and greet, go to lectures. I would say the only problem with that conference is there's five lectures every hour, so you have to make a decision. Love you to come to mine. I'll be talking this year about coconut oil, actually the skinny on coconut oil. It's an interesting concept when you're talking about fats and oils that they can actually support weight maintenance. As I discuss in my book, Weight Loss, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. And we're so happy to have on board today our guest. And our guest is Dr. Lise Altshuler. Dr. Altshuler is a naturopathic doctor with board certification in naturopathic oncology and has been practicing since 1994. She received her bachelor's degree from Brown University in medical anthropology and her doctorate of naturopathic medicine from Bastia University, the same school as our co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, where she also completed her residency. She maintains a naturopathic oncology practice out of naturopathic specialists based in Scottsdale, Arizona, and she works as an independent consultant in the area of practitioner and consumer health education. She is the executive director of TAP Integrative, a nonprofit educational resource for integrative practitioners, and is the author of many books. As a matter of fact, as we speak, I am viewing her page on Amazon. There's a page just dedicated to Dr. Altshuler with all her many writings, and it's something that you may want to check out as well. Today we'll be focusing on the Definitive Guide to Thriving After Cancer. She's also the co-author on the Definitive Guide to Cancer, and also about her exciting new Five to Thrive plan at 5tothriveplan.com. All of this, of course, is listed on our website. If you listen, go to the archives with, after we have today's show live, it will be posted. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Altshuler.
Yes, I'm very glad to be here and good to talk with you.
Now, you have, I really think that if anyone knows anyone who gets cancer, and unfortunately, you can share with us, you know, the proportion of people who may, in fact, face that. I really think you are the best resource I know of for having a consult so people can use what we term integrative therapy. And how do you address that? Like, people often say, well, should I go with all natural therapies or should I go with the conventional route?
Yeah, you know, well, you're bringing up such an important point. I mean, if I could wave my magic wand, I would create a world where everybody diagnosed with cancer would have the opportunity to say no to integrative therapies instead of yes to integrative therapies, so that it's sort of a given. And, you know, what I mean by that is that as I often talk to my patients, there's nothing nice about cancer. It's not a gentle disease in any respect. It really just doesn't play by the rules. And so it's time to, you know, basically take our kid gloves off and step into the ring and really fight the disease with everything we have. And from my perspective, that includes conventional therapies when they're used appropriately, as well as natural therapies. And I think it's when you combine those things together that you have the potential to really create much more significant opportunities to not only halt the disease, but to support people's health and vitality while they're going through treatment. You know, and of course, it's not something that you want to do just willy-nilly, because there are things that, even though they're natural, could interfere with conventional therapies, so that you have to do that in a very thoughtful and knowledgeable way, which is why it's important to get good experts on your team. So I'm trained as a naturopathic doctor, and I also have certification in naturopathic oncology. I have colleagues that are also naturopathic oncologists. I think that, you know, people like that are certainly wonderful. There's not very many of us, so fortunately there are many other integrative practitioners with a lot of extra training or you know, sort of self-taught training around cancer. And I think really getting into the hands of a knowledgeable integrative practitioner who will work with your oncologist, communicate with your oncologist, then you have a team of providers, and I think that's really the best option for people.
I agree with that totally, Lisa. And I know it's not, I don't think it's something that you keep quiet. You seem to shout out about it in all of your bios, that you yourself were not only an expert physician focused on cancer, but actually you yourself did have cancer and have thrived along the way.
Yeah, you know, I was working at a cancer hospital and was right in the heart of integrative cancer care. And while I was working there, my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And so for the next 2 years, I really took quite an interesting and compelling, wonderful journey with him. And he used many different conventional therapies as well as natural therapies. The result was that he, as he said, 1 year later, after his diagnosis, which he outlived by about 17 months, by the way, he said, you know, I feel better now than I felt in the last 20 years. I mean, he really felt well with advanced pancreatic cancer. And so it was a real testament to the power of integrative medicine. So I thought, okay, you know, once he did pass away, I thought, well, you know, that was, it was a horrible loss for me, and it was a wonderful learning experience. And now I, you know, really do know this disease well. But clearly I had more to learn, because then I was diagnosed with breast cancer myself a couple years later. And due to some of the characteristics of my breast cancer, I also went through integrative conventional therapy. So I had surgery, I had chemotherapy, I had radiation, I took tamoxifen for 5 years, and of course, throughout all that time, I used natural therapies quite extensively and still do to this day. And I can say with confidence that I really know now that when we combine these things together, we can really hit cancer on its head, number one. And number two, we can feel healthy while we're dealing with a very serious disease and getting very difficult treatments. I always felt like a healthy person throughout that experience. You know, I had side effects here and there, but they went away. And I just felt at a very deep level that my vitality was strong, and I kept it strong. And so, you know, I've learned a tremendous amount through that experience. I hope I don't have to repeat it again. But, yeah, I know this disease, unfortunately, rather well.
From all sides. And
all
it's
sides.
Interesting that you were already deeply involved with it professionally when then it came across your path personally. Because very often it's the other way around. I find many holistic physicians and practitioners are led to their interest in holistic therapies because of a personal experience. But in your case, it was the other way.
Yeah, it was, and it was kind of an odd thing in a sense, but I'm grateful in many ways because my professional experience with oncology really gave me a lot of tools that I could apply to my own experience, and now my personal experience gives me tools to apply to my professional experience, so it's a nice circle, actually.
It is. Now, let me ask you in specific, because you brought it up, in terms of tamoxifen. Patients have come to me, and they've been told, and perhaps they've been told incorrectly, that once they start on that post-treatment for breast cancer, they have to stay on it for life. And you said you were on it for 5 years. Is that the usual prudent course?
Well, you know, the data has changed a little bit. Actually, just before my 5th year, a very important study came out that confirmed that there was additional benefit to some women for staying on tamoxifen for 10 years versus 5. And with that study, most oncologists changed the recommendation from 5 years to 10. The added benefit is is relatively speaking, quite small for a lot of women, though. So in reality, the conversation that prudent oncologists are having is not just a blanket recommendation, but rather, in fact, a conversation and to discuss the additional risk reduction that could be, you know, predicted from taking tamoxifen for 5 more years, weighed against the toxicity, the adverse effects of the tamoxifen. Because although it can be, you know, generally well tolerated, it's not a benign drug. So there are some issues that one has to take into account. And then for each woman and their oncologist, it becomes an individual decision. So in my case, the additional risk reduction was not worth the cost of the drug.
Yes, and I think that's what you bring to the table on a tremendous level. And I'm hoping that you are lecturing to oncologists widely. I know you do so many professional presentations, but I think that's a really important area of expertise that you shine in because it has to do with the individual risk-benefit ratio for each individual. And even in your books, you never state no one should ever take chemo, but you might state this particular chemotherapeutic agent is most well suited for this particular kind of individual with this diagnosis and with this specific drug therapy routine. We can also integrate these antioxidants along with it, these herbal remedies, or not, because they may interfere with the pathway of the chemotherapeutic agent. Very few people have that expertise.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you're bringing up just a really important issue, which is to keep this as individualized as possible. You know, fortunately, I've had the good fortune of coming across many, I would call them enlightened oncologists now, who are also taking this approach to a greater extent. In reality, most of their patients in oncology, there have been some studies that estimate over 90% of people diagnosed with cancer are already using some form of natural therapy along with their conventional treatment. So oncologists hear this all the time. So many of them are beginning to say, okay, there might be something to this. I can't just say no. Let me figure out what I can say and what's safe and who I can refer my patients to. So there is a growing number of those type of oncologists. You know, oncologists are well trained in oncology, conventional oncology. I'm not, so you know, that's, I need somebody like that on my team for my patients. And at the same time, I think oncologists more and more are reaching out to people like myself and other integrative practitioners who have additional training in natural therapies so that the patient can benefit from the expertise in both worlds, and together we can make really good personalized, individualized decisions. The right chemotherapy is offered at the right time. The right natural therapies are offered. I mean, there are many cancers where people are in sort of a active surveillance mode. There are certain lymphomas, there's certain stages of prostate cancer, for example, and at those times, natural therapies are absolutely the primary therapy because we can use those therapies to, in fact, halt and in some cases put those cancers into remission. So I think, you know, it really does depend on the individual situation. And it's, there's a lot of nuances to that. So actually, just one other point on that, when people on either side of the fence, so to speak, so oncologists or so-called alternative therapists, when they make blanket blanket statements that just say, you know, conventional oncology is bad, don't ever do chemo, or natural medicine is horrible, don't ever do it, then there's something wrong with that, because the truth is much more nuanced.
That's true, but unfortunately, I would say that the vast majority, like you're talking about enlightened oncologists, it's a shame you have to use that word. It should just be conventional oncologists who are reading their studies. It's evidence-based, what you're teaching. In other words, the best outcome is integrative, because very often if we take more of a particular supplement or herb along with a specific chemotherapeutic agent, there's so many studies now showing that the chemotherapy will be better at its job at a lower dose.
Right. It's so true. And that data is growing, fortunately. You know, the challenge is that a lot of the studies are published in either journals that oncologists are not reading, or they're published in so oncologists are used to seeing studies with thousands of people repeated across multiple centers. So then when we come up with a well-designed trial that maybe has, you know, 100 people in it, and we can really rely on the design, and we know that the conclusions are good, to an oncologist, it's like, oh, that's nothing. That's a tiny little study. And they do have a point. You know, it's not as big the data as compared to what they have. But when you look at what's being studied, the risks inherent in, say, an herb or a nutrient are so much lower that in many cases you don't need to have such a huge study to determine safety, because the safety in many cases has already been determined. So really what you're just looking for is effect. And you can get good effects learned from smaller studies. So, you know, there's still some issues of communication and just understanding, but yeah, as I said, I hope that it's starting to change. I mean, it's not certainly that way everywhere. There's still very many conservative oncologists. You know, I think many of them have the heart's in the right place, but it's just their mind's a little closed still.
Now, let me ask you this. Let's say one of our listeners, and we have a lot of listeners, Lisa, because on our rebroadcast, which is on Podbean through PRN.fm, we actually are showing something like 110,000 downloads, so a lot of people are going to hear your show, and they're lucky that they will. Do you know of a website, or do you have it on your many websites, such as 5tothriveplan.com? Do you have a resource where people can track down, let's say, an oncologist who is studying the integrative approach?
You know, there's not really a good resource for that. There's a couple of sources I would recommend. There's the Society for Integrative Oncology, which is a society that was created for conventional providers who have an interest in exploring the research base for integrative therapies. So there's perhaps of that group some more members that are open-minded, but it's not really a referral directory, so it doesn't really help the average person very much, but that does exist in any case. You know, Cancer Treatment Centers of America is a hospital-based system. One of their models is integrative oncology. I did work there at one time, and they do truly offer integrative oncology, so I think that's an excellent resource for people as well. And then in general, you know, I would look at the cancer center that you're getting your treatment at and see what kind of complementary services they offer. And some centers stop at, you know, they offer art therapy and mindfulness classes, which are fantastic and wonderfully helpful, very important. And other cancers do that and have expanded it to include, you know, acupuncture and maybe some referrals to local providers. So that's another thing to kind of inquire about as well. And then, of course, all those wonderful support groups out there for people that range from, you know, brick-and-mortar Cancer Gilda Club type of environments all the way to online groups. Those are just a plethora of good resources as well.
Well, that's excellent. Now, if somebody wanted to work with you, let's say they were newly diagnosed, I know that you usually will only also work with them in terms of cancer therapy if they in fact do have an oncologist on their team, perhaps someone local to them. So I wonder if there's any way you could help them find someone, like give them the right questions to ask so they can interview. Don't forget, your doctor, and this is true about Dr. Lise as well as myself, and I see patients every day locally in my office in Oyster Bay and also online, but we also work with you, but we want you to have good medical care as well. So if you were working with someone, could you recommend an oncologist, or you would recommend a bunch of questions they could ask? Because they, the person, the patient, is the employer. Sometimes they forget that. They're right. The employer. They can hire you or myself. They could hire an oncologist. It's not like they just have to go with whatever that physician says.
Right. Yeah, and actually I should also mention, so there is a referral directory for naturopathic oncologists, and that's www.onc, for oncology, A-N-P, as in physician.org, so O-N-C-A-N-P.org, and on that site you can find other naturopathic oncologists. You can also find members who are not board certified in naturopathic oncology, but have taken an active interest in the area and are more attuned to the nuances of oncology. So that's a good resource as well. And then, you know, in general, I think really what's helpful is, first of all, for people to understand that their cancer is different than the same diagnosis and somebody else, because that cancer lives in a body, and that body is within a person, and all of the issues unique to that person are going to show up and influence the cancer as well. So, and that's particularly true from an integrative perspective. From an oncology perspective, really all their therapies are directed at killing the tumor and destroying the tumor. And conventional complementary therapists are often looking at, yes, we want to try to make that tumor go away, but we also want to, at the same time, not only protect the host, but to change the environment of the host in a way that will make that person, that host, less hospitable to cancer growth. So we want to make the environment different so that the cancer has a harder time growing. So that's where the power comes, because you can address both the environment, the terrain, and the tumor itself. So knowing that, the questions that I encourage patients to ask of their oncologist is really, how good are they at destroying the tumor? I mean, you want a good oncologist. That's the most important thing. And then second to that is what's their attitude towards me, working with other integrative providers that have, you know, good credentials, will communicate with the oncologist, won't just do things in a blanket way, but will do it in a very integrated way. Will you, oncologist, be willing to talk with my other providers and or to, you know, at least hear what they're doing and be willing to understand it and not put me in a position where I have to hide or not tell you what I'm doing? And I think once those two fundamental things are in place, then the patient can begin to piece together a bit of a team. Even though they might not be totally coordinating, at least they're not adversarial to one another.
Excellent advice. We're going to take just a little break right here. I want to tell you, listeners, that you are listening to a wonderful, knowledgeable guest, Dr. Lise Alschuler, and you can find out more at 5tothriveplan.com. We're going to talk about that when we get back, 5tothriveplan.com, and also drlise.net, that's drlise.net. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of sarsaparilla called sarsaponin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
Dr. Z every Tuesday right here on Progressive Radio Network. And also, better yet, I would say, because it's all the time, 24/7 at prn.fm, and just go to Natural Nurse. And all the shows are archived, as well as many of the other fantastic shows that are part of the Progressive Radio Network. And our guest today is Dr. Lise Alschuler. She is a naturopathic doctor with board certification in naturopathic oncology. She is an author of many fantastic books, including The Definitive Guide to Cancer and The Definitive Guide to Thriving After Cancer. I think a wonderful place to look at all her work is on her page on Amazon, her author page on Amazon. She has all her books listed there, as well as many articles that she has written, and also visiting her website at drlise.net. That's drlise.net. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lise.
Yes, my pleasure.
And you've given us a lot of fantastic information. I want to go into what your current projects are. Like, we have a book online called Five to Thrive, and then you have the website 5tothriveplan.com. What is that project focusing on?
Well, my business partner, Carolyn Gazella, and good friend, also a long-time ovarian cancer survivor, she and I have been working on this together for quite some time, so you know, we wrote our first book together, Definitive Guide to Cancer, and it's really a book to help give people a sense of integrative oncology. So although it's useful on the whole continuum of cancer, as we were going around and giving talks and doing, you know, interviews and so forth on that book, people said, well, what about after I'm done with treatment? what do I do now? And so that really inspired us to write our next book, The Definitive Guide to Thriving After Cancer, which centers around this concept of a five to thrive plan. And we can get into that if you want, but there's essentially five elements to bringing about greater health, recovering from treatment, and preventing or at least reducing the risk of recurrence. So with that, we have set up a website where people can get a lot of information. We do Thrive Thought every week, which is a short little excerpt of some aspect of that plan. We have our own radio show, which you were a guest on last week, which was wonderful, and that's Five to Thrive Live on W4CS.com on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, and that's the Cancer Support Network, and that's also podcasts are on iHeart.com. And then right now we're in the midst of, or in the beginnings of, creating an online sort of individualized program that we'll be offering to people who have gone through cancer. So we're really trying to, as and in all the ways we can, to give people the tools they need to basically create more health in their body, to change their terrain so that it moves them along that continuum towards health and away from cancer.
So I want a little bit more information about something else that I personally am interested in, because I actually got an email from the Naturopathic College, University of Bridgeport, Dr. David Brady, who's a wonderful colleague to both of us. And he was talking in his email about the TAP program, TAP Integrative, a nonprofit educational resource. And when he sent that out, I didn't even realize that had to do with you. Yeah. You know, everything is so, let's say, integrated. So for my own interest and for other professionals perhaps who are listening in, what is TAP Integrative?
Yeah, so that's actually, different. Of course, that's another endeavor I've been working really hard on for the last few years, and I'm super excited about it. It is an online resource for integrative healthcare practitioners or clinicians, and it's a way for clinicians to learn from each other. So we take experts and we feature them with regards to a specific clinical topic, and then when they're featured, they have a Q&A, there's various research abstracts with commentary, there's some audio abstracts, there's video interviews, we have video group case discussions. It's a very rich learning environment, and it's designed in a way for practitioners to be able to log in, grab a couple of key clinical nuggets, and get out if they have just a few minutes between patients. And it's also a way for people to spend a lot of time with really kind of reminding themselves about the integrative approach to a particular condition, really geared towards practicing integrative practitioners. The whole site is peer-reviewed. It's peer-reviewed against the body of evidence, but it's informed by the expert's clinical practice. So it's clinically relevant and yet trustworthy at the same time. So, yeah, I've been very excited with that. I've been fortunate to have the founding sponsorship of Integrative Therapeutics. And so with that sponsorship, have been able to create a really beautiful site that so far practitioners are enjoying quite a bit. And actually for the consumers as well, we have a newsletter that people are welcome to sign up for. We send out two little news clips on kind of summaries of an interesting news story on natural health, really nicely laid out. And people can also like us on our Facebook page. And all of that is found at TAP Integrative.
Well, I definitely will look into that because I'd love to be a part of it somehow. Now, looking back at this book, because I would say that this is your latest endeavor for everyone in general, is the Thriving After Cancer, the 5 to Thrive plan. And that sort of comes after the definitive guide that's really about after. And what I love about all of this is just by having those titles there, and this huge amount of knowledge really supports hope in terms of, okay, I have this diagnosis. Maybe I'll look at the book and talk to Dr. Lise about how will I get through this. But most of your work and focus is about after. which is really wonderful because I think that's so hope-provoking.
Yeah, and hope is so, so important, but it's a special kind of hope. It's actually what I call informed hope. So if people, you know, people can be kind of blindly hopeful, and if that's the case, they can make decisions that are not in their best interest. So informed hope is really about having a well-founded sense of optimism that's based on the fact that I'm going to gather resources that will enable me to make the best decisions possible for myself and my health. And in the world of cancer, and particularly, you know, really from the time of diagnosis, ideally even before diagnosis, but by the time of the diagnosis, all the way through the treatment, to well past the time that conventional treatments are over, there is always so much that people can do for themselves from a dietary perspective, from an activity perspective, from a stress management perspective, and then from a natural supplement perspective, either botanicals or herbal therapies as well as nutrients. All of these things can very definitively influence our health and in that way reduce our risk for recurrence if you've been through it already, or optimize our chance for complete healing. So there's every reason for hope with this diagnosis.
Well, in Five to Thrive, let's talk about some of these specific things that I know you know so much about, and many people may not even know what this word means, so we can allow you to define it for us. What is epigenetic exuberance?
Yeah, that is a really exciting thing. So epigenetics is basically the science about how we live our life, the things that we do, that we eat, that we think, how those activities influence the expression of our genes. So we used to think that our genome, which contains the information that all of our cells use to do their activities, we used to think that our genome was basically the dictate of our health. But in fact, it's very much like a blueprint for a house. So our genomes, our genes are like the blueprint. And yes, that will build a house that looks a certain way. But in reality, the quality of that house is very dependent, as we know, on the construction supervisor, the alertness of the carpenters, the quality of the nails, the type of wood, et cetera, et cetera. And in very much the same way, the genes in our bodies, their expression changes depending upon the foods that we eat, the activity that we do or don't get, the sleep that we do or don't get, the nutrients that we exchange or give it ourselves. All of that will change which genes turn on and which genes turn off. And we can actually influence that pattern of gene expression in a way that favors healthy cell behavior and disfavors aberrant cell behavior. So that's really the crux of why natural medicine works. When we really understood this concept of epigenetics, it kind of was like a big aha for us, because now we know, oh, this is why when I do my meditation, take my morning walk, get enough sleep, that's why I'm healthier, because we're actually changing the information to our genes, changing the way our genes express themselves, and in that way totally alter our health profile. So it's a very exciting concept, and it absolutely underlies all of our work with people after the diagnosis of cancer.
Well, I have to bring up something since we're talking about genes and it's so much in the news, and that would be about, and you probably know what I'm talking about, Angelina Jolie's decision to, you know, she had surgery on her breast because she had a particular gene. When we look up the science behind that gene, what it's about is that it decreases the body's ability to detoxify specific carcinogens as well as other toxins. So it seems like a more prudent action would be to be more aware of the things that turn the genes on or off and avoid them and include more of those things that keep those genes turned off, then remove her breast, because now, as predicted at that time by many holistic practitioners, what happens is now she's worried and now she's getting more surgery, because it doesn't mean you won't get cancer.
You know, the BRCA mutation is a very challenging issue for a lot of people. I mean, my my partner Carolyn actually wrote a really wonderful blog that was published on online on Psychology Today about this issue. But the reality is that I think, you know, in truth, Angelina had a lot of risk factors that gave her a very high likelihood of developing breast and ovarian cancer and perhaps other cancers that are related to the BRCA mutation. So, you know, for women in her situation, prophylactic surgeries can be the most kind of peaceful decision. And it's not the decision that everybody would want to make, but for some, it's the appropriate decision. What I think Angelina neglected to emphasize, it wasn't really the point of her last article, but what has not been included in this conversation to nearly enough, which I think is the point that you're making, is that surgeries are not the only answer, and they're not the end of the story either, that this gene, a mutation exists in cells throughout our body, and we can't cut everything out. So we have to try to do something that's going to change the behavior of that gene and other genes around it to sort of compensate, if you will, for that defect. And that's where, and we know there's been studies that have shown that women with that BRCA mutation who eat 5 servings of vegetables a day, who maintain a healthy body weight, who exercise regularly, have a lower risk of developing, it's still higher than average, but it's a lower risk than of developing breast and ovarian cancer than their BRCA colleagues who don't maintain healthy body weight, who don't eat well, and who don't exercise. So we know that our lifestyle can influence our gene expression, and that's a really critical part of the equation.
It is. So if you are opting for surgery, it's not that surgery is the be-all and end-all. Let me ask you this. You may know this, and maybe you don't. This is just out of left field. Are there studies showing that if people do get these multiple surgeries, that they do not develop some other cancer, like kidney cancer or liver cancer? I mean, is it truly protective against getting cancer if you have that gene to have these surgeries?
Yeah, So BRCA mutation is most strongly associated with breast and ovarian cancers. It also is implicated in some lung cancers, pancreatic cancers, some colon cancers. So that risk stays elevated with those surgeries. However, the rate of those other cancers is much lower, the incidence. So it's the impact of anything on that cancer is going to be much harder to find in research. Having said that, of course, having your breast removed and your ovaries out is not going to influence the development of those other cancers. So it still, therefore, behooves these women to really, you know, unfortunately, they were dealt a card that means they're going to have to take prevention very seriously for lots of other reasons.
That's what I think. Like, wow, I found out about this. That's fantastic. So it's a guidepost to me that I need to be really on top of eating better, exercising, decreasing my stress, which, of course, there's no downside to doing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the nice thing about these natural therapies is that you are reducing your risk, which is kind of almost happening in the background. And meanwhile, you're feeling great. I mean, you start to get energy you never knew you had. Your mind works better. You feel stronger. Your digestion works great. So you get so many other benefits along the way.
That is what's so wonderful about natural therapy in general. Well, we're going to take another little break right here, Dr. Lise. We are listening today with our super knowledgeable guest, Dr. Lise Alschuler. You can find out more about Lise at drlise.net, and also 5-2-THRIVE-PLAN, all one word, 5-2-THRIVE-PLAN. We're going to listen to some show promos and other information from Progressive Radio Network, and then we will be right back. And we're back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us today. We love to have your comments. You can visit us at naturalnurse.com. Click on schedules. Just yesterday, I posted the newest schedule for our lectures and workshops. We have a lot of classes outside coming up where we go out, gather edible and medicinal plants and make them into medicine, and you get to take them home and use them yourself, and you know what plants are growing outside, which ones are poisonous, which ones are edible, which ones are medicinal, and how to prepare your own medicines. It happens to be something that's fun to know, but during disasters, I have gotten literally hundreds of emails and phone calls, that's after the disaster and the electricity goes back on, remember? And saying, gee, I studied with you 5 years ago, and we were completely out of food. Our refrigerator was turned off. There was no gas in the car, and we knew what plants to use outside for food and medicine, and it was really life-saving in our situation. So it can be anything from a fun hobby to a survival goal. So you're welcome to join us for those classes. Just go to naturalnurse.com, click on schedule, and you'll see a lot of the classes. Also, we have in-office consults as well as phone consults, and we have classes in herbal medicine certification, both for consumers and professionals alike. So today we have as our guest Dr. Lise Alschuler. She's a naturopathic doctor with board certification in naturopathic oncology, which has been our topic for today. If you missed the show and you'd like to hear it, it will be archived right here on Progressive Radio Network. And I was very happy to be Dr. Lise's guest last week on her show. It's called the Cancer Support Network. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that network and your show, Dr. Lise?
Yes, and definitely you have to check out Ellen's episode from last week. She did such a nice job talking about breast cancer prevention and really great conversation. Our radio show is called 5 to Thrive Live, and it airs live on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and it airs online on w4cs.com. That's W, the number 4, CS.com. And you can also catch past episodes like Ellen's on iHeart.com if you just search 5 to Thrive Live.
Oh, well, thank you for all that information. Now, there's such interesting things in your 5 to Thrive plan. What do you mean by prod the pathways with dietary supplements? I love the verbiage on these things, and you really know what that means.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think in many ways, when we change our diet and we exercise and sleep and manage our stress, those are broad sweeping changes that have a multitude of effects that certainly influence in a very significant way our health over time. Dietary supplements are kind of like the prongs of a fork, and they just go in and they tweak little biochemical pathways here and there in very precise, targeted manner. So really that's the advantage, or the, in my view, the necessity of using dietary supplements, botanical extracts, etc., to provide concentrated nutrients that, from what we know from both traditional use as well as current scientific research, we know how they will affect certain key biological pathways or signaling sequences or even gene expression in our cell. And when we can combine these in certain ways, we can actually, in a very significant manner, change cellular behavior. That's why these supplements are so effective and so helpful for people beyond lifestyle changes, because they can kind of take the lifestyle changes, which really are the foundation, to the next level and just give that extra little tweak to really move somebody to a very new state of health.
That's such an important concept, Lise, because people come into my office, and I'm sure yours, with shopping bags full of supplements. I mean, they literally might have 100 bottles of all kinds of stuff, and they're looking for health within these bottles. And then when we do a 3-day diet diary, they're eating garbage. And then when I talk about a healthier diet, they tell me they can't afford it. they can't afford to buy an organic cabbage for 99 cents instead of 59 cents, and yet they think they can afford thousands of dollars a month in supplements.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think it's easier, it's for some people it's easier to pop a pill, but in reality that that supplement is going to be kind of swimming upstream if it doesn't have the basis of healthy living underneath it. And when we can combine those things, that's when the magic happens. I mean, there are times, you know, don't get me wrong, when people need quite a lot of supplements, in my opinion. You know, active cancer or recovering from treatment is a good example. And I'm certainly guilty of recommending perhaps a dozen different supplements, but that's still done in a way where those supplements are collaborative and are working together in a very, you know, thoughtful manner. And again, that's never done in isolation. So it's always done on top of a good, you know, or moving a diet that's at least moving towards optimal and activity and all these other things.
So let's talk about, at least we're getting close to the end. Uh-oh, I could talk to you all day, but give me like one really good supplement that you often recommend across the board.
Oh,
that's hard to choose one.
I have to choose one. Okay, well, you know what? The one that came to mind is curcumin, which is, excuse me, the extract of turmeric root. And curcumin is one of the compounds that's found naturally in turmeric root. And nowadays we collectively, the industry has come up with ways to concentrate that curcumin. Turmeric as a spice is certainly healthy, but you have to eat a lot of turmeric spice to get some of the benefits that we now associate with curcumin specifically. And curcumin is probably the master compound in terms of reducing inflammation in the body. Inflammation underlies all chronic disease, cancer included, and when we have uncontrolled chronic inflammation in our body, then we will basically find ourselves in a situation where our cells are working under very stressful situations and start to behave abnormally. And there's this constant balance happening in our cells between an inflammatory response and an anti-inflammatory response. And so we really want to encourage that balance and make sure we support the anti-inflammatory side of that equation. And that's really what curcumin does in a variety of very eloquent ways. There have been hundreds, literally, of mechanisms that have been described for how curcumin works to turn off the inflammatory response and to turn on the antioxidant or anti-inflammatory response. So we know a lot about how it works. And in addition, there are many dozens and dozens of clinical trials that have been shown, that have been done using curcumin. And we now know that curcumin significantly improves a variety of chronic diseases, ranging from things like mild depression all the way through to things like cancer. So curcumin becomes kind of a very versatile, very powerful thing to include. And the only time I don't use it, to be honest, is when it might interfere with another medication that somebody's on, because it does have some known interferences. But aside from that, I almost always consider it and often use it.
Thank you so much for all that great information. We want to remind our listeners that they can find Dr. Lise Altshuler, our guest today, at drlise.net. And until next time, please join us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And as always, on behalf of myself and my partner, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we're hoping that you stay healthy.